Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I am your host, Ben Trueblood. With me, as usual, is John Paul Basham.
Hey.
I was waiting to see if you would jump in early and give the hey.
I was about to sneeze.
That would be bad timing. It hasn't happened yet.
Nope.
On air. But excited about the topic that we have to discuss with you today. But as a quick reminder, if you have not yet left us a rating and especially a written review on iTunes, please head over and do that, as well as hit that subscribe button. We would love to spend a lot of time with you on a frequent basis. So these come every week, and we would love to be on your device every week as we hope to deliver really valuable student ministry content that you as a student ministry leader in any context can take, apply, and hopefully make a difference in what you're doing. We love doing this because we hear from you guys how much you love it. So thanks for sending us the tweets and the emails and all those things. You can connect with us through Twitter at Ben Trueblood and at John Paul Basham. We would love to hear topics that you would love us to discuss and spend some time with. And so send those to us. We love to hear from you. Let's take the conversation outside of the podcast as well. So it would be, that'd be great. So let's jump right in to the topic today. We're going to be talking about longevity in youth ministry as the broad overarching topic for today. How you can stick around in a place. Now, we all hear statistics and we all hear the phrase thrown around, and it seems like this gets smaller every time someone says it. And I don't know that anyone really knows the exact number, but the average youth pastor is at a place for 3 years or 2 years or 18 months or even a year, is what I heard someone say. And so it's all over the map. But the general idea there is that longevity is something that student ministry lacks on the whole.
Yeah, a bunch of short timers out there.
And that is exactly what people say. Well, today on the podcast, we're going to talk about some of the myths of longevity, how you can stay in a place for a long time, and what you need to, the kind of mindset you need to have when you go in somewhere. And let's start right there. So when you begin ministry at that church and you go in, it's your first full-time position, you need to go in with longevity in your mind. You need to go in thinking, man, I'm going to be here for a while. If it's not a place that you could stand being for years in a row, then you don't need to go there, I would say.
Yeah, if you're looking at that position saying, oh, I'll be here for 2 years and then I'm moving down the street to the bigger church or whatever it is, you're going into it with the wrong mindset to begin with.
Yeah, it's not, I guess right off the top, like student ministry isn't a stepping stone to something else.
No.
Like if you want to be a church planner, just go do it. If you want to be a pastor, pastor. Don't use student ministry as a stepping stone. And additionally, we should never go into a place seeing it as a stepping stone. Man, I'll pay my dues here for a couple years, and then I'll move on to what bigger and better, whatever bigger and better means to you.
Because your call there is to those people.
Yeah.
So when you view that as a stepping stone, you view those people as a stepping stone, and your relationship to them is that.
Yeah, and you're never going to be fully invested when you go into a thing, into a ministry, thinking, man, I'm only going to be here for a little while. You're never going to treat it the way you would if you think, man, I'm going to go here, I'm going to plant here, I'm going to live in this community, I'm going to build relationships here.
So how would you say, as a student pastor, you show up at your post, at your first place of service?
Yeah.
What should your mindset be from that point forward in relation to where God might lead you in the future?
Yeah. I showed up to my first post in student ministry and was there 6 months. So this is a great topic for me to really address. But I think inside of that, here's what I would like to say. I went there thinking I'm going to be here for a long time. Like, there was no end in sight when I went there. I went to serve as a middle school pastor for a great friend of mine. And he hired me to come in. I went, I felt like God had placed me with this person to mentor me and teach me in ministry. And I went to serve with them. We had been there a month, and he said, "Hey, I'm talking to this church a couple hours south of here." And I thought, what in the world? Like, I'm newly married. We just moved here. I moved here to work with you and learn ministry and for to be in this mentoring relationship, and you're just going to leave? And he was like, "Well, they need a middle school pastor as well, and I want you to go with me." And so in that, I really felt that God was leading me to stick with this person and learn from them ministry, that God had something for me inside of serving with Michael. And so I went to the church with his 6 months after I'd been somewhere. But I think the mindset, now I'm not advocating everybody's first thing should be 6 months. What I am advocating is approaching your first role like you're going to be in that role with no end in sight. Like in the business world, and people might even ask you in ministry as you interview somewhere, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Like, probably what's your, will ask you that.
Yeah. Like, what's your 20-year plan? I believe that it should be, man, my plan in 5 years is to be leading student ministry right here because that's what God has called me to do. And then outside of that, God can change his mind. God can, well, it's an unintentional theological statement I just made. God can change the plans that you have in your mind.
Yeah,
is a better way to say that. God may have some other type of ministry that you don't yet know about. But to lay out and say, man, I'm going to serve here for a year, and then that's going to put me in a place where I can serve down there for 2 more years, and then that's going to put me in a place to serve down there for 5, and then I'll be in the place where I think I can stay forever. I think that's a wrong approach.
Yeah.
So entering into, first thing here, enter into it. Man, plan like you're going to be there forever. Go into it thinking, I'm going to invest in this group of people. I am going to live here, build roots here, have a family here, integrate yourself into that community.
Yeah, I think part of that, part of showing up right is getting there right. So as you pray through where God is calling you to be, you need to be very honest about what you understand God is calling you to do. I think there's been a lot of guys that have taken a position in ministry because of what it might afford them in the future, whether it fits their call or not, whether it fits exactly what they feel like God has gifted them to do or not. Sometimes it's all about the paycheck. Sometimes it's all about the location. But the bottom line is, if you're not focused on what God has called you to do in that place, you're going to struggle being there for the right reasons. You might end up being there for a long time because you feel guilty about leaving.
Yeah.
But that's not healthy either.
Right.
Just to be somewhere for a long time could be exactly the opposite of what those people need.
Yeah.
So if you don't get there right, if you're not praying through that and saying, God, is this what you have for me? Is this your will for me? Is this where I'm supposed to be so that I can serve you best? If that's not the first part of that decision-making process, then you're going to end up in a bind.
Yeah, because God does move people. God does change hearts. God does set you on a different path that he knows about, to further correct my earlier theological misstatement, but that you may not know about yet, and God shifts it. And so that, I think one of the myths of longevity is something that you just pointed out, and I want to make sure our audience hears this, is just because you've been somewhere a long time doesn't mean your ministry's awesome and doesn't mean that it's super healthy just because you've sat in that seat for a really long time. Now, your relationships might be better with people, but it doesn't mean that you've discipled a bunch of kids. It doesn't mean, again, it simply put, just because you've been somewhere a long time doesn't mean that you have a healthy ministry. And I think a lot of times we, on this topic, when we're in a room of youth pastors and somebody says, I've been at my church for 20 years, and the first reaction is for people to stand up and clap and say, man, that is awesome. Is it?
Yeah. When I got here, there was a, you know, handful of kids, and you look around and it's still that handful of kids.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes, maybe that's what God has given you there, but you also have to ask the question of, man, are you pushing an agenda of your own here, you know, that's not gaining any traction because it's not of the Lord?
Yeah. Or you're just hanging on to something that's comfortable, and you've been a part of it for a long time, and so you've said no to other things that God brought through your path because where you are is comfortable and easy, and you know everybody, and everybody knows you, and you can just roll through life and feel like you're making a difference. So there seems to be a little bit of tension on this topic, because there are some who err way on the longevity side that kind of throw stones at the people that seem to move around a lot. And the same thing happens the other direction with the people that move around a lot and saying, no, man, I'm just following what God has called me to do and following the opportunities that He gives me. And I'm not trying to go bounce around all the time. This is just the plan that God has had me on. And there seems to be this weird tension in that. And I think an extreme to either side is always dangerous in anything that we talk about. But it just kind of gets to me that the first reaction, we don't know anything about the ministry. We don't know anything about the discipleship. We don't know anything about the evangelism. We don't know anything about a person's strategy in ministry, only that they've been there for a lot of years, and it induces, because of that, a raucous applause.
Ooh, raucous.
Yeah.
So here's the question for you. Is it okay to entertain offers from other churches while you're in a position? You know, is that something that you should jump at? Is it something that you should resist? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think... So I'll answer it two ways. I'll answer it how I always tried to do it when I was in ministry, and then I'll answer it how I approach it as now someone who does a good bit of hiring for our team. And I know you and I agree on how we tried to do it while we were in ministry. And that's when people called and said, hey, I want to talk to you about X opportunity. I always prayed through that. I always wanted to take a pause in my mind and think and pray and say, God, is this something that you would have for me for another step? I mean, I don't even want to use the word next step, because, again, ministry is not about going up this ladder, but another step in ministry. Do you have another door open for me? And so I always took seriously the question from other people and the request to think about and pray about another ministry position. I never sent resumes out. I never put together the package of stuff and asked friends to spread my name around. That was just not something that I believed God had for me, that I believed in His calling on my life to serve in student ministry, that He would also put me and guide me into the places that I needed to serve Him in that calling. And I still believe that to this day. When people ask me, I get this question all the time, man, how long are you going to be at Lifeway? Do you believe that you're going to be back in the local church someday, or is Lifeway it for you? I say, well, man, for the foreseeable future, I believe I'm going to be at Lifeway. I'm working, I'm planting here in Nashville, and this is where our family, where we're raising our kids, and like that, for the foreseeable future, this is where I'm going to be. Do I believe that God may put me back in the local church one day? Yeah, I do, because my heart is so much for the local church. And that's part of my calling. I came to Lifeway because it gave me an opportunity to serve local churches to a great degree. And so I love what I do here because I get to do that. But is God going to one day call me to serve back on a local church staff? I mean, if I had to place a bet on it, I'd say yes. But when? Who knows? I could be 70 years old, retire from here, and go pastor a church somewhere out in the country. Who knows? But again, it goes back to that original statement. Like, when you are somewhere, live there, stay there, minister there, develop there.
Yeah.
I didn't answer the second part. Now, as a hiring person, what do I look for? Well, there are situations where we're hiring somebody right now. So if you're listening and you want to submit a resume, then my Twitter feed has the link in it, at Ben Trueblood. You can go there. So there are moments where we solicit people's resumes. We say we have an opening, come apply. But I always look at those, and my first question is, why do you want to leave where you're at?
Right.
And I think that's a healthy question. I think before submitting a resume somewhere, you should ask the question, why do I want to leave where I'm at? If it's because of I don't like this family that's in the church, or I'm bitter about this, or I've been here a while, I just don't like it anymore, or this is difficult, or whatever, then I think that's a good moment to just evaluate where you're at and say, man, do I need to make some changes in what I'm doing, or is God really calling me to pursue something else?
So in looking at, you mentioned, when you get to a place, you need to expect to stay there.
Yeah.
Are there some practical things that you would say, some practical tips you'd give to a student pastor that can help that longevity, help them really dig in and, you know, put some roots down?
Yeah, I think one of them is relationships with other youth pastors. Regionally and in your community, if you can develop being a part of some kind of network, maybe it's not even like uber organized, but it's more of a loose hanging out relationship with other youth pastors in the area, developing a community for your own. I think it's super healthy for a youth pastor at a church to be involved in community with people that are not necessarily in their local church body. Yes, you should be in community with people in your church, but you're going to feel a need to always filter and to, man, what can I say and what can I say? Can I really be transparent with people that know my pastor, with people that are in my ministry, with parents of students in the ministry? And that's sad. And that's something that I think is dangerous. And so when youth pastors feel like, man, I can't be transparent in community in my own church, they flee from community. And that is an even more dangerous place to be. And so being able to find community maybe with other youth pastors in your area is a way to satisfy community and be a part of something that God has designed for us, not as ministers, but as believers in Jesus to be a part of. Maybe we can find it there and have a little bit more transparency and be able to walk through. The good thing about that, too, is that those other youth workers, man, they're going to know, those youth pastors, they're going to know and be able to identify with struggles that you have along the way because they have the same role that you do in another church. So the language is the same. There's some commonality there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people neglect, first, community, and second, some type of regional youth pastor community.
Yeah, and it's so common to see student pastors totally isolated. And a lot of times it's, you know, the student pastor's got his family, and that's it. It's kind of that it's just us and no more.
Yeah.
Which is, it's the opposite of what we teach our students in student ministry, because we're telling them you need to be in accountability relationships, and, you know, you need to be doing life together, you need to be studying the Word, you need to be, you know, doing on mission for the Lord together, all this stuff. But in our own personal lives, a lot of times just out of a fear,
yeah,
like you said, of not being able to be vulnerable with the people that you minister to, we isolate ourselves. And then, man, I remember some specific conversations with student pastors that I believe God kind of orchestrated and put in my life, where some things came out, just conversation across the table, and it's one of those like, man, you deal with that too.
Yeah.
You know, you're struggling here too. I'm not, the only one. And I think that's exactly where the enemy wants to put us, in a place where we feel like we're the only one that struggles with that. And the, you know, whatever the emotion that comes with that is, whether that's shame or just loneliness or discouragement, he wants us to be alone in that.
Yeah. And it's that loneliness or that isolation that damages the ability to have longevity at a church and to be able to stay somewhere for that extended period of time. To get past that initial couple of years, it takes being in community and being able to speak freely and know that you're not alone in the midst of it. Man, when people feel lonely, they want to flee and they want to run from whatever brings the isolation.
So I think something else that plays into all of that is, I know as a student pastor, I had a tendency to always be thinking student ministry. It was Wednesday night, Sunday morning, events, small groups, community groups, discipleship groups. I mean, it's nonstop.
Yeah, laying in your bed at night, staring at the ceiling, thinking, how am I going to do whatever's next?
Yeah. And conversation with your spouse is all student ministry stuff, because more than likely you're doing a lot of it together.
Yeah.
And the time that you see your kids is often when they show up to the student ministry event that you're at.
Yeah. So throw some cheese sticks at them and head back into whatever you're doing.
Here, son, here's the cow tongue we were playing football with earlier. Play with that.
Which, if you're looking for a game, ultimate frisbee with the cow tongue is a winner.
It is.
Make sure it's thawed.
You may get some email complaints, but it'll only be a few, and it's probably worth dealing with.
Some things aren't. This one for sure is.
So how do you think a hobby fits into all this? I mean, carving out time for something that you do outside of ministry, is that super important? Does it get in the way of ministry?
I think it can get in the way of ministry if it's taken too far. But I think it's super healthy to have an activity you do that is away from the ministry. Now, if there are students in your ministry that also do this hobby and it's a relational connection, cool. If it's something that you do with your family, your wife, your husband, your kids, whatever the case may be, then that is awesome. But I do think having, if we're listing out ways that you can have longevity in ministry, relationships with other pastors, and then hobbies or some type of activity away from student ministry is huge. Now, my hobby is collecting hobbies. And so I have a lot of beginner hobbies.
Y'all, Ben has really done every kind of hobby and bought every piece of equipment to go with that hobby.
Yeah. It's a walking garage sale of hobby equipment. So find me on eBay. I'm just kidding. I won't share that with you, but I think you can take it too far. I think sometimes hobbies can turn you into the unattached or lazy youth pastor. Like if you're playing golf, golf is a great hobby. I did it for a little while. I'm horrible at it. Here's when you know it's gone too far for me. If you're at work and all you can think about is getting away to do your hobby, then it's probably a little imbalanced.
Red flag.
Huh?
That's a red flag.
Oh.
If you're at work and all you can think about is your hobby, red flag. If you've seen this video on YouTube, then you'll know. I'm not even going to give the reference.
I haven't. I'm disconnected from the culture. In that, I thought you were making a golf reference, and I was like, I don't know what that golf reference is. Anyway, so same question back to you. What's your view, activity wise? Like, what's a healthy balance there, or is it even necessary?
Well, so I think I've already admitted to the fact that I was just always thinking along the lines of student ministry. And I have just started to learn this lesson of the importance of being able to unplug.
Yeah.
And I think this goes in multiple directions with hobbies and things that you're doing, but also the importance of disconnecting from work intentionally to make sure that you've got time with your family, with your spouse, and if you have kids, with your kids, to make sure that you're pouring into them and make sure that's your first responsibility is your family.
Right.
So those hobbies and that time that you unplug, the time that you intentionally say, I'm not looking at my email, I'm turning my phone off, maybe even, I'm just not going to do work here because I'm protecting this time. I've found for me, as I've been super intentional about doing exactly that, the stress of work, then the weight of responsibility is much easier to handle when I'm not just living in it every moment of every day.
Yeah, I'd agree. The unplugging is necessary. And at first, this happens for me. At first, your mind will war against you about that.
No doubt.
And it will strike at your identity and your worth, and it will make you like you truly unplugging, like taking email off of your phone and not answering and sharing with people, I am going to be unplugged, and putting the away message up on your email and all those things. There will be times when you're attacked in that, and you will feel like you are dropping the ball. But you're not. If you do it with balance and you do it to connect with your family and connect with Jesus, it's going to improve your ministry. It's going to improve your personal development. It's going to improve your longevity in the ministry. People who don't unplug are ones that burn out. And not only do they never experience longevity in a church, but they leave the ministry altogether. So if we take the conversation of how to have longevity at one church to how to have longevity in ministry, there's no shot of that if you never unplug. And I believe, and we did student ministry as a family, and anytime you do student ministry, you do it as a family. You bring your kids to games and to band concerts and all of those things. And if you can do it, bring family to camp. I get all that. But sometimes when people say, man, ministry is just what we do as a family. And so we do all of our ministry stuff together as a family. Man, you're not being good to your family. You're just using that as an excuse to make yourself feel better about family time when all you care about is ministry.
Yeah.
And you need to unplug.
And we hear the stories from the wives of the student pastors that come in. For example, we host a beta conference in Nashville. Three times a year, four times a year, we'll have student pastors come in for this conference, and we talk about exactly this. And a lot of times when we do the wives session, my wife and Ben's wife will get together with all the wives of the student pastors there, and they'll just sit down and just talk about life. And every single time, this is something that comes up.
Yeah, every time.
And it is a deep hurt when the wife of a student pastor says, he never takes time for me. You know, we're always doing ministry, and I want to support him, and I do support him, and I love him, and I understand the urgency of this call that's on his life. But when do we just get to be married?
Yeah.
You know, when do we get to be husband and wife? When do we get to be mom and dad? You know, how did I lose that?
Yeah. Taking your wife to the Friday night football game to cheer on students is not a date.
Yeah.
It's important, and you should be involved in those things as a student pastor, but you also need to unplug. And man, a lot of danger happens, not only against longevity, but in life in general. When we refuse to unplug, it's again, your mind is going to war against you. And in some situations, perhaps even your supervisors will war against unplugging. But in that case, I would encourage you to have a very calm, gracious, direct conversation about how unplugging equips you to be better in ministry. Now, man, taking 4 Sundays off a year to unplug and asking for 5 weeks of vacation, probably too much. So there's always a room for self-evaluation in that.
Yeah.
But you got to unplug. So along with that, John Paul, what would you say are some appropriate ways to do, like, super practical? Like, how much is too much unplugging? Like, when is a good time to unplug? Like, what are some things that you should think through, like, super ground level practical?
Well, I think coming off of what we just talked about, your marriage relationship, an easy thing for you to do is just calendar date nights. And I remember, so something that I would suggest to everyone listening, if you're married, marriage counseling is something that you should do. You just need to see that as a way to fend off any attacks of the enemy that he is trying to bring into your marriage, into your relationship, because it is a stressful. You've got a target on your back. I mean, there's a huge element of spiritual warfare.
And it doesn't mean you're weird and broken.
It doesn't. It just means you're being wise. And so you also need to be wise about who you go to, right? That needs to be a Christian counselor that understands the dynamic in your life and understands everything that you've been called to do.
Not a friend or a relative.
Yeah. So Crystal and I did this, and one of the things, my counselor was very blunt with me, and he said, "Bro, you're just being a jerk and a failure of a husband if you're not carving out time to just date her."
There you go.
And it was one of those, like, okay, thought you guys were all, like, soft-spoken and nice and stuff in these conversations. I think he might have cussed at me a couple of times. So that became something that, I mean, that hit me right between the eyes, because he was absolutely right. I was neglecting Crystal in that way. And so immediately we went and found a Mother's Day Out program that I started paying for so that Crystal could have some time to be around other women, because the only conversations she ever had was with a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old at the time.
Which, those are tough conversations.
Right. And we started scheduling date nights and putting them on the calendar and prioritizing them. And nothing gets in the way of those date nights. And that has made a huge difference in our relationship. And this is something that I learned late. Well, I hope it's early in our marriage. I hope that we have many, many years to come. But I feel like I learned this lesson so far past when I really needed that lesson.
Yeah. So here's another question. We briefly touched on unplugging, and you might experience some attack even from supervisor or something if unplugging is something that you desire to do and you should. So in the frame of longevity and having an activity that separates you from the ministry and relationships with other youth pastors and taking time to unplug and pouring into your family and all of those pieces that we would say lead to longevity in ministry, what happens if there's a disagreement with the person that oversees you? So it's a minister of education or maybe a pastor directly or a committee of some kind or something like that. Like, how does that component impact longevity, and how should a person respond if there's conflict there?
It's a difficult situation to walk through, because I think the first thing that you have to do is seek to resolve that conflict.
Right.
Because you're there. If that person is your supervisor, they are the senior pastor, they are the minister of education, they're the next gen pastor, whatever your church structure looks like, you are there to support their vision, because God has given them ownership of that ministry.
Yeah. And if God calls you there, then he calls you to be under their authority.
Right.
Yeah.
So your first job, and we've said this on more than a few podcasts, is to support their vision and to seek out how God is calling them to lead that body and how you can support them in that and come alongside them in that. So when you have conflict in those things, you need to be seeking to find resolution.
Yeah.
I think there's also some places where you're just not going to find resolution, though.
Yeah. So what happens in that? And before we answer that question, I think it's too easy to say, well, I tried, not going to happen. That means I'm open to leave.
Yeah.
We should exhaust options in resolving that conflict.
Well, and I think it's often a personal thing.
Yeah.
And so then there's the question of, are you just leaving because you got your feelings hurt? Are you just leaving because you got your ego checked?
Yeah.
You know, when guys, you know, their reason for going somewhere else is, well, I just couldn't get along with this guy.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's just because that guy was right and said that you were being a lazy bum.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever it is.
That's right.
So you need to look at those things and really evaluate what's going on in that situation.
Yeah. So let's say you've done that, tried to resolve conflict. You've searched, you've had asked God to search your heart. You've searched. There's no ill motives. It's just not working.
Yeah.
Talk about longevity. And it seems like longevity is a goal, and it should be. And we started off the top of the podcast saying we should go to a place thinking, I'm going to be here a while. Is this a moment where you think, man, God might be stirring in my heart to do something different here?
Well, so let me just say, I think it's okay to ask that question.
Absolutely.
And I think it's healthy to ask that question. I don't think it is. It's not what you want to come in there doing and dwelling on. You know, you don't want to set something for every couple of months just to ask, God, do you still want me here or do you want me to go somewhere?
Yeah. So I'm watching this TV show on the History Channel right now called Alone. I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast before. I may have because it's blowing my mind. It's so fascinating. So they take these 10 people, they throw them on Vancouver Island,
yeah,
and they literally are all by themselves. Have I talked about this before?
I don't know, but I've seen it too.
Yeah. So the people you last, the goal is to make it longer than anyone else. There's no end. Like if it's a year, you're out there a year by yourself. It's a survival type situation, all by yourself. No camera crews, nothing. So in that, the people who constantly talk about, man, in 2 hours, I could give up and in 2 hours I could have a cheeseburger. You can already see it, that we're like five episodes in and you can already see it. There are people whose mindset is, I'm going to be here a while and I'm going to plan to be here a while. And sure, I'm going to be hungry and I'm going to be tired and I'm going to get rained on every night and my shelter is garbage, but I'm going to be out here. And then there's a whole other group of people that every time a challenge happens, they think, I could just give up and fix this right now. I could give up and fix it right now. So that, man, that mindset, it is a mental game in large part.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for finding joy in every circumstance, looking to find that, you know, a lot of times the struggles that we have with leadership are a very small part of the ministry that we've been given to do in that place.
Yeah.
But we let it overshadow everything else. You know, we filter everything by that conflict, when in reality, it's probably an auxiliary issue. And your ministry to your students is still very much 98-99% of your engagement in that body. So are you willing to lean into the Lord and ask Him to help you to find that joy in that place? Can you stick around when things are difficult?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times that is it's not the measure, but it's a measure of your walk with the Lord. You know, can you trust Him in a difficult situation? Can you trust Him when it's hard?
Yeah.
I think it's also, like we said, okay to begin asking if that's where we're supposed to be. And it very well may be the beginning of a process that God is leading you through to move you to the next place that He wants you to be. You know, I believe there's some times when God makes it uncomfortable for us to be where we are because He wants to push us to the next spot.
Yeah. And it could also, the other side of that would also be true. It could be that question is healthy because it either opens your heart for God to begin to move you to another thing, or it refines your vision and renews your heart for the place that you're at. And so I think this question is healthy. We're not meant to run away from this question. If we ask it right away, And it is our default response to every conflict or every struggle that comes our way is, man, I could tap out right now. That's unhealthy. But staying in that question when it comes and really dealing with it, God could move us. God could open our hearts to another path, or God could refine that vision and give us renewed energy to live in where we're at.
So we've talked about when we have conflict. So let's just take it all the way to the end of that spectrum, and you say as a student pastor, I cannot and will not support the leadership that is above me.
Yeah.
What happens then?
I think you need to leave.
Yeah.
And that may sound super cut and dry, but you are not doing any good to the ministry, to that pastor, to the students, to your family, if you have a family in that. All it's going to do is continually compound your bitterness and frustration and anger, and you will begin finding struggle in every single thing that happens. And so if you are at a point where you're saying, I cannot and will not follow the leadership of this pastor, then I think you need to exit, and you need to get out of that situation. Now, on your way out, you need to make sure that you're not able to follow that pastor because of something that he's doing or something that you're doing. Just because you're in that spot doesn't mean it's someone else's fault. You could have made decisions or acted in a certain way or had internal attitudes or the wrong people speaking into your life that puts you in that place where you can't follow that leadership. And if that's the case, then part of your moving on needs to be a heart of repentance as you seek to find the next, whatever the next thing is.
Yeah, and maybe another thing that I would say about as you're on the way out is you need to realize that you still have a responsibility on the way out to support that leader.
Yeah.
So you can't leave in a blaze and just scar that church and split them down the middle on your way out the door in rebellion against something that you disagree with.
Yeah.
You have a responsibility to protect the hearts of the people that you've been called to shepherd. And so as their shepherd, if you are, you know, making them all run and flee, then you're not fulfilling that call of shepherd. You know, if they're all running for the hills because of the way that you're going out in a blaze, then you're not honoring the Lord and you're not serving his church well. So you need to have that in mind as well. You need to leave well.
Yeah. You know, I think something that comes to mind as a part of this conversation for me is there are going to be people at that church longer than you, regardless of how long you stay there.
Yeah.
Unless it dissolves the moment you walk out the door, which
it won't.
Chances are it won't, unless something crazy has happened and there are other problems there. There are going to be people there, a part of that body of Christ, long after you leave. And so I think part of longevity is arriving at a place knowing and thinking and believing, man, I want to serve here for a long time. And then also recognizing, and if God calls me to another place, these people are going to be here longer than me. And so I need to make sure that this is set up well for ministry to continue on into the future.
Yep. Good word.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. We would love for you to head over to iTunes, leave a positive rating and review. Take about 30 seconds and write out a review for us. Connect with us on Twitter at John Paul Basham and at Ben Trueblood. We would love to connect outside of the podcast as well. And hit that subscribe button. We would be forever grateful.
Hit it.
So thank you once again for listening to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. We'll catch you next time.